I also have a duty to help women in their everyday life, to protect them in a way. Clothing is there to protect us, the same as houses or our homes, and to bring the best out of us and to empower us as well.
This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup. In this series of podcasts for Harrods, I'm talking to people at the top of the creative industries about their work and their relationship with luxury. Today, I'm with Roxanda Ilincic. Her name has become synonymous with luxurious but utterly wearable clothes. She's known for her astonishing use of colour, and she's worn by an array of women in the public eye, including Michelle Obama, Kate Blanchett, and the Duchess of York. Roxanda, hello.
Hello.
Welcome to my humble room.
Lovely to meet you.
God, look at you. You're so beautiful and tall and elegant and beautifully dressed. It's really quite annoying. I'll just scuttle after you, all short and not beautifully dressed. Please have a seat.
Thank you.
Roxanda, in this series of podcasts for Harrods, I'm talking to people at the forefront of creative industries about their work and about their perceptions of luxury. And when journalists write about you and your work, your clothes, the word luxury is always there alongside your name. Why do you think that is? I mean, obviously, clothes can be luxurious, but clearly you conjure a sense of luxury. Where do you think that's coming from?
I think it's probably with the type of clothing that I'm doing as well. It's something very maybe timeless that I'm always kind of searching for and trying to achieve in my work that is always present. It's almost like my DNA. And I think that sense of timelessness, of buying something that you can cherish and wear in special occasions or wear every day, but then pass to your daughter or granddaughter, it's there to last a long time. It's probably what makes them more luxurious.
I suppose timelessness in itself is a bit of a luxury, isn't it? Or just time.
Time is the biggest luxury, and there are many different, types of luxury. But I think in our busy lifestyles and in a surrounded with social media and all those different informations that are traveling globally in a speed of light straight to our ears and eyes, I think one thing that we are having less and less is the time. Particularly moms, you know, us mothers that are also having work and a busy lifestyle with family life.
So how do you manage it? Because here you are, a brilliant designer, feted around the world, multi-million pound business, and a young daughter, and family life. So, we all, I think, as women, walk around wondering, how does she do it? How does she do it? You know, and thinking that someone's going to reveal to us a kind of pearl of wisdom that we can embrace ourselves. Have you got any tips?
Oh, gosh, I don't think that I'm quite managing or achieving. I think it's always such an incredible juggle. And what are you losing and what are you gaining? You always feel that you're losing something on one of the fields, either if it's a private life or is it a business. Somehow there is never enough time for both of them. So I think it's that kind of balance and trying just to kind of be content with what you can achieve. I think it's very important to always remember we are all just the humans and not to be too hard on ourselves and to realize that things at the end of the day don't have to be perfect.
But are you speaking to yourself there as well? Because I know that you are quite a perfectionist. I mean, you have to be in
true.
Order to do what you do.
I am, and often I remind myself that being perfectionist, that it's not necessarily a virtue. But I am perfectionist, and I feel working in fashion, and I think you have to always try to achieve it, but know that it's not possible.
I suppose the thing that your clothes are most synonymous with is colour. You know, as soon as we think of a Roxanda dress or, you know, item of clothing, we think of something that's a blast of colour. Where did that come from? I mean, do you think that that's something that's innate in you, that you either have a sort of capacity to embrace colour in that way, or do you think it's something that you've nurtured along the way?
Probably both. I think that it comes very much from my country, from Serbia, from Belgrade, from that really abundance of colors, particularly in the summer. We have very strong and long springs, and then summers and autumns are also filled with color because the climate was such that was really nurturing everything from, you know, flowers and the products. And very often I would go with my mom to markets. We used to shop in the markets much more than in the supermarket, so you would be surrounded with abundance of produces. And people like to wear color as well. They were not opposed to it. So I think that I was just always surrounded by it, and it came kind of naturally. And then when I moved to London, I realized that somehow color is almost something strange, something that people are not so familiar with, that they maybe feel safe in wearing black or gray or colors that are more neutral, like beige and like cappuccino colors, camel colors, and bright colors like colors of summer, like yellow and fluorescent green and pinks and purples were quite something that wasn't considered as luxury, I can say. And I could see possibility to break that and to bring something that I love, but at the same time, something that can turn fashion world into something more fun. And that fun is very important to me. And very often we think that certain colors go together and certain colors don't go together. And that was maybe second of my goals and things that I wanted to achieve, to break those perceptions of what goes together, which colors are actually working and which colors are not working. And often in my collections, I would bring colors that people normally would be very, very scared or actually prefer not to see together. And I would make them in a certain way.
I think you might single-handedly be responsible for, which I think has become slightly more popular now, but that fantastic fusion of orange and pink,
which is one of my favorites.
Really one of my favorites.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's definitely one of my favorites. And I remember I kept using it season after season to the point that one of the buyers said to me, "Oh my God, please stop." But I loved it. I just loved it. It was making me very happy. And I noticed that it's making my clients very happy too. And I think that's the goal as well, you know, to make the people that are enjoying your product happier and more self-assured.
Do you remember where that combination came from? Because I know that your inspiration comes from lots of different places. I think even a crane on the city skyline.
That was the crane on the city skyline was a combination of bright orange and bright yellow that came from building site and many others, actually. I think what is important to be constantly inspired, to be able, like a filter, to constantly observe everything and to kind of filter it in your own way and to make it into something else. I think that life is exciting and life is very inspirational. And I personally don't have to travel to another countries or to another cultures to be inspired. I mean, for me, it's enough to be surrounded with very dynamic city like London or with a beautiful nature and just to kind of find something inside of me that will trigger that next impulse for next collection.
But what makes you think, oh yeah, that looks good together, when the rest of the universe might be thinking, ah?
Yes,
and when did it start?
With that, I like to really follow my instinct. There is something inside me that it's kind of telling me that if I feel that something, I usually call them colors that sing. And if I see them singing and I feel that they're singing together, I know it's right. So for example, that orange and pink was a singing combination. So it's pink and yellow or orange and yellow, many really, that I kind of discovered along the way.
And when did your interest both in clothing and in color begin? I mean, did you go through the pink phase like every other child, or did you go straight into kind of clashing primaries?
Well, funny enough, I didn't have a pink phase. I didn't have a pink phase, but I definitely was always obsessed with clothing. Really, really, even as a little girl. And I remember when I started school, we started school much later back home than here, so we are 6 or 7.
Much more civilized.
It's easier. A bit longer childhood, I would say. I remember that even then, I wanted to express my personality or what I believe in through clothing. And above all, I wanted to be different. I wanted to stand out, which is not necessarily so much what I want to do now, what I'm trying to achieve with my clothing. But at that very kind of tender and young age, I remember I wanted to say so much with through the clothes.
It's unusual, isn't it, though, at that young age? You know, I mean, what sort of age are we talking about when you were confident enough to want to stand out, to want to
Yes, I know, because I think that's the age when you kind of do prefer to blend in and to be the same as everybody else. But as I said that early on, there was something in me that kind of realized, obviously subconsciously, I don't think that consciously I knew that, but just kind of realized that there's so much to say through clothing. And it was the journey that I tried to escape in a way, because obviously then I tried to become architect and, you know, tried to kind of find another vocation for myself. But I always kept coming back to fashion, and it was just something that I couldn't escape. I guess it was meant to be.
Why did you try not to do it? Was there something about fashion that you didn't, want to embrace?
Well, back home, fashion as a profession, there were not many jobs that you can find as a fashion designer. That was quite limited. And also, if I was to start my own label by myself in Belgrade, miles away from all the fashion capitals, at that time, obviously, there was no social media, so obviously it was much harder to show to the rest of the world who you are and what you can do. So possibilities were much, much narrower. And also fashion was seen as something very frivolous, something that people do as a hobby, not as a profession. I was always kind of quite good at school and, you know, quite like a high achiever.
And studious kind of felt, and diligent.
Yes. Yeah. So I did enroll myself in architecture, but then at the same time I did course that another university that luckily was kind of nearby, that is actually called Faculty of Applied Arts, that had fashion as one of the subjects as well. So it was kind of like a joint journey.
So you did both for a while?
Yes, I did both for a while.
And then you chucked it in and came to London.
Well, I was reading quite a lot, quite a lot of fashion magazines as well. And one name and one school were constantly coming over and over. And that was the name of Professor Louise Wilson and Sandra St. Martin's. And I started to kind of realize that many designers that I admired at the time are coming from the same course. And it must be something on that course that is making them so great and so appealing to me. And I thought maybe I should try and visit the course and see if there's any chance for me to do my master's. And that's what I did, and it literally changed my entire life.
How did your family feel about you giving up the studious side of yourself and heading for London and fashion college?
Yes, exactly. I was lucky enough to have very, very supportive family. My mom always had huge passion for fashion herself. I guess in another life she probably would be fashion designer as well, but
was it partly the sort of communist era, I suppose, as
yes,
well?
Yes, when she, exactly, in yes, in her time, fashion was really considered as not even a hobby. But she always had that passion to dress up, and she appreciated designers. She was traveling a lot, so she, luckily for me, had quite a lot of Yves Saint Laurent pieces.
Oh, wow.
I know, but like she loved color in a slightly more classic way than me. So I was surrounded with beautiful things since childhood. I wouldn't always know what they are and what they were, but I was definitely surrounded with them, and I was kind of growing up with them. I remember sitting in the same room with her when she was getting dressed up to go to a certain event, and she had those wonderful roses in many different colors, and she loved wearing, and she would always get dressed up and then put it rose as a final touch. And that was my highlight as well.
So what did it feel like when you got to London and you were finally throwing away one side of yourself and embracing wholly this thing that had been your passion from a very young age?
It was very exciting on one side, and then at the other, it was very, very hard because I had a great time back home. I must say I had so many friends and great time studying. Belgrade is a fun city. You live in a certain way. You have quite a lot of time to go out and enjoy yourself, I must say, as well. And obviously, when I came to London, all of this was suddenly gone, and I was in a foreign city, not knowing anybody, speaking the language, but obviously it's not my mother tongue. I wasn't as fluent as I am now. It was hard, I must say. It was very hard, and I was very, very homesick. But it's very interesting that being homesick literally shaped me as a designer in a very peculiar way. When I was back home on University of Applied Arts, I was rebelling against anything that is classic, that is elegant, that is considered as beautiful. And my designs are very much, very experimental, very much what I'm not doing now. very kind of underground, edgy, etc. And it was interesting that when I came to London, out of this kind of incredible homesickness, I started to long for the things that were reminding me of back home. So I started to merge that more of a London spirit, rebellious character in fashion, etc., but with something very classic, very timeless. The fusion of those two quite opposite things started to create me as a designer and started to slowly build my DNA. And I think that my tutor, Professor Louise Wilson, realized this and started to encourage it. And she saw that I'm building something that is unusual and different and new for people here, for audience here. And she really encouraged me to push it even further.
It feels, though, also that what you describe as the sort of classic element of your clothing is also influenced by your studying architecture, because in a way, a lot of your dresses in particular are a sort of form of architecture, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They are. I absolutely agree. And I think that what is nice in my work that is very layered, but that you can also see where those layers are coming from. And they're very personal to me. They are literally who I am, what I'm made of, what my family is, what my upbringing is, and what my schooling is, what I love about architecture, how I'm inspired by art, which it's a discipline that I had to study at the University of Applied Arts. So we had it as a very important subject and very, very strict professor. So you can see all those elements kind of coming through.
How much did the history of art and the studying of art influence your work with fabrics and things?
Quite a lot as well, just by saying that I can't be anything else but fashion designer. But if I'm talented enough, I would definitely like to be artist. That is one thing that for me, it's kind of the ultimate way of, you know, expressing yourself, but also expressing the society, the time that we live in. And that is always something that find one way or another to influence my collection. And that bond is very, very strong as well.
You really care about how things look, about beauty and beauty in objects and beauty in clothes and beauty and so on. And yet you actually make quite comfortable clothes. And one of the sort of signatures of beauty always seemed to me to be that you had to be really uncomfortable to achieve it. You know, it's always a really tight jacket or the Victorian corset or to be fashionable and elegant, you know, required a certain degree of sacrifice of comfort. You seem to have managed a balance between the two. Is that on purpose or a happy accident?
That's definitely on purpose, apart from, you know, having that luxury to expressively express myself as well. And what I'm saying, I also have a duty to help women in their everyday life and to kind of protect them in a way. And this word protection and sheltering and armor that I'm often use when I'm explaining my work, it's very important to me because I almost see that clothing is there to protect us the same as houses or our homes, and it's there to shelter us and to bring the best out of us and to empower us as well. And I feel that my clothing is doing exactly that while still being very effortless and comfortable and easy to wear. Because as a woman, you know that that's what you need. You don't want to be constricted and stopped by wearing a certain things that is uncomfortable or that just demands too much attention.
I think also as you get older, you know, you just don't want to be uncomfortable. You know, you realize that you feel more confident when you're comfortable.
Absolutely. And I think that that kind of sense of actually, you know, creating the freedom in clothing always somehow came from women. Coco Chanel was the one doing it as well. And I think it's important to continue that.
You've got some big A-list fans, you know, two American first ladies at last count, Michelle Obama and Melania, which is kind of odd that you'd have both of them, and actresses like Cate Blanchett, you know, who's fabulously elegant. Do you think it is that element of armor that appeals to them? Because these are women, you know, on the world stage, on a platform, having to appear to be confident and successful and all of those things.
Definitely, very often women from different backgrounds and in different profession, even the women who are not in the public eye that I know, but they do decide to wear me in certain occasions when they're almost looked at under magnifying glass. It's occasions that are really, really important for them. And when they need that extra support, that extra sense of confidence or beauty or just armor in a way or protection from outside world, it makes me really proud to kind of actually realize that I'm doing things right and I'm doing them the way I wanted them to be. It's a huge honor to see them in situations like that are not easy.
What do you wear when you feel like that?
Well, I'm spoiled for choices, I must say. So I am always wearing my one of my designs.
Do you never feel like wearing anybody else?
I do, and sometimes I do wear, you know, particularly my friends, other designers. Personally, I have to feel that sense of a connection with something.
What about like tracksuit pants and your husband's sweater on a Sunday? I mean, do you ever not look incredibly elegant?
Trust me, yes. There's many times when I don't look incredibly elegant.
So what's your shame outfit?
Oh, gosh, probably my pyjama that I don't manage to take off because I'm just kind of walking around the house or sleeping for most of the day.
Yeah, I know. It's bad when the delivery man comes, isn't it? And you're still wearing them at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Another of the things that's always struck me about your clothes is that if they're showy, it's only in the color and the dynamic nature of them. But they're not, they don't show a lot. You're quite covered up. And that seems to increasingly have become a sort of trend more recently that you would definitely have been at the forefront of. So what is it about the sort of sense of modesty and decorum, something quite Victorian?
I know, it's very Victorian, and I find it very, very odd, I must say, that suddenly now I've been kind of grouped with this kind of like a modesty movement, etc., because it was just something that came really, again, natural to me, and it was very against what time was kind of wanting at the time when I started my collection. And I think it comes from that notion of being a woman, of wanting to present your virtues or your quality not by showing your skin, but on the contrary of not showing your skin. Also, there is one more practical reason for it, because I love to sculpt. I love to have big shapes and big sculptural shapes. And you know, when you have a small amount of fabric, it's quite hard to say that. So there were kind of like a mixture.
What's wrong with a boob tube?
Exactly. Nothing. So I just kind of feel it was probably a combination of different things. But above all, me liking to cover, to show kind of virtues in a different way, like almost like you have to discover certain things rather than they're just kind of shown to you immediately. But yes, it became trends all of a sudden. maybe I will have to change. I don't know.
Suddenly you will be
not
making mini dresses. Yes. I just wondered what the anti-establishment young Roxanda used to wear when you were in Belgrade and not designing the things you are now.
Not necessarily that I want to say, nothing like this. Because it's very, very interesting, the whole journey of me, I would say, finding myself and kind of discovering how little I know about fashion. When I came to St. Martin's to do MA, you know, I thought that, you know, I know so much, etc. But, you know, as I said, when you come to that incredible course that Louise was running in such an orthodox way, and when she almost strips you of yourself and who you think you are and makes you start from scratch, you actually realize many things. One of them was, oh my God, what was I wearing when I was in Belgrade? But I was wearing everything just to rebel against society, against my heritage, against interesting my mom as well, because my mom is very elegant, and I just saw that as utterly old-fashioned and, shall I dare say, boring. But at the time, I mean, I must be honest, I did. Many, many things have changed after I came to London. You know, it was very, very kind of different time.
That's a very big build-up. I want to know what you were wearing.
I won't tell you. It would still stay a secret.
Okay, but stonewashed jeans.
Stonewashed jeans. But what is interesting and what I want to underline, again, when people say, oh, what are your biggest like fashion mistakes? I don't see anything as a mistake. I see everything as experiment, as part of...
But I think you do see it as a mistake because you won't tell me what it was. So you must be really ashamed of it.
I wasn't... You know what? It's not so much ashamed as it's such a kind of like different image of to what I am now. You know, it's almost kind of like... road to discovery.
But and I think people love that. I think people love people, the idea I think people, that you've come from here and ended up here. It doesn't mean it's better or worse.
I think people, particularly in London, would definitely appreciate a lot. You know, there were many things that I made myself or that I customized myself. To start with, I did have a short dresses or short skirt. Not tight, definitely not tight. But, you know, there were things that are very, very different than what's happening now and or what's happening after I kind of went to that whole St. Martin's phase and looked myself a bit close in a mirror and kind of admitted to myself that it is okay to like things that are more traditional. It is okay to like things that are elegant.
Do you think your daughter will embrace your style or do you think that she'll have her period of rebellion?
I hope that she will have her period of rebellion. I think she must. I think it's so important to have that long or short, or maybe she will stay stuck in that. But just kind of element when you are questioning yourself, you're questioning your society, you're questioning your upbringing, you're questioning everything around you. And I think it's important.
You've brought along a luxury item today. Or in fact, you haven't brought the luxury item.
I brought a picture of.
Why have you only brought a picture of your favourite luxury item?
It was a bit difficult to carry because of the size. And also, I was worried I might break it. So, just to be on the safe side.
So what is it?
Well, it's actually a series of my collaboration with incredible ceramic, Link Ceramics from Switzerland, that I did a couple of years back together with wallpaper. It was something that I still see as one of the kind of my top luxury objects because it's incorporating many elements of somebody else's work, in this case, a wonderful ceramist that started in 1930s. It's Switzerland, a woman, with all of her timeless pieces and timeless shapes that are looking very, very modern and very actually even some of them quite futuristic, I must say.
Explain what these things are.
They're actually, oh my God, yes, how do I explain this? They're all having very different shapes of cylinders and kind of rounded tubes.
Are they functional or non-functional?
They're functional, but I must admit I never use them as vases. I use them more as a vessels. They can be vases.
How big are they?
The smallest one is probably about 30, 40 centimeters. And then the largest one is about 60, 70.
So you used her designs and then you embellished them?
Yes.
How did it work?
So what I did, I actually used different elements of my prints. And then together we worked on the different color combinations and then settled on this quite kind of elegant one with a dusty pink and black.
They're quite understated for you.
They are, but what you can't see, they are, I agree. And the reason why is because it was quite hard to achieve all the color combinations that for me are so easy to achieve on the textiles. And with ceramic, because the processes are so different, it was quite tricky. After actually fixing the color onto ceramic, they were becoming much paler. So that's one of the reasons why I didn't go as wild as on my designs. But what you can't see here on a picture is this rim that is in fluorescent orange. And that is that really little Roxanda signature that even when you look at those vases and you're maybe not sure who designed them, and you see that kind of really cheeky fluorescent touch. you know they're coming from somebody who's having fun with colors.
And what makes them a luxury item for you?
This was the first time that Lig Ceramics as a company decided to venture into stronger colors. Usually the vases are just perceived as a beautiful object in white as the shapes. And this was the first time that they actually decided to give trust to somebody else to kind of make them a bit more alive and more colorful. But also all the memories that this project had, you know, like it came through a friend of mine and there were many problems with it in terms of execution, how we can make it. And a team and Annette from Link Ceramics is absolutely incredible and another very, very inspirational woman. You know, I have them in my home at the moment and every time I look at them, it brings those memories. So just kind of combination of what they are, what they represent and what they mean to me. It's that my kind of top luxury.
And just lastly, really, before we go, we're sitting here in Harrods, you know, which is for many people the kind of embodiment of a luxury
yes.
shopping experience. And it is full of luxury items from the very top to the very bottom. I wondered if you've ever wandered this store and coveted anything.
Absolutely. Many, many times. Many times. I must say, the jewelry department, there's quite a few items there that I would like to own. Harrods has so many temptations, I must say, that, you know, jewelry is not the only one. I think one thing that I'm definitely going to do as we finish here is go straight to the food hall because I'm a bit hungry and this is the best food hall in London.
There's something for everyone, quite literally,
yes.
isn't there? Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You're welcome. Pleasure of mine.
This has been True Tales of Luxury, recorded in Harrods in London, with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Roxanda Ilincic. Goodbye.